You're listening to WWBC, Cocoa, Merritt Island, Melbourne, the Titusville, and the Beaches, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Cocoa, Vieira, 94.7 FM, and W264AS, Melbourne, and Palm Bay, 100.7 FM.
Hello, Space and Treasure Coast. This is Cedar McGee on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, FM 99.9, and FM 100.7, right here on Viewpoint with Cedar and Friends. This is a strong opening today, because we have a strong show today.
We do have
a strong show
today. And we had a brilliant weekend, too, which I know we're going to get
to. We sure did. So we're having a call-in guest today. We're going to have the former governor for the state of Florida, Governor Robert Graham, which everybody knows as Bob Graham. He's going to be calling in on behalf of his daughter's Gwen Graham campaign for governor. Yes. And in studio, we have a really good friend, a good friend of mine, a good friend of the show, Sanjay Patel. And Sanjay is here. He is a candidate for the U.S. Congressional representative for Florida's 8th district. So go ahead, Sanjay, say hello to our guests.
Hi, thank you so much for having me on today.
That's such a mouthful, because now that I threw my hat in the ring, I just have to remember not to say state representative.
Right.
I have to remember to say that Sanjay is running for U.S. Congress, representing Florida's 8th district.
Exactly, and that covers all of Brevard County, Indian River County, and a small portion of Orange County.
Right. And so, Ellen, before we take a phone call from former Governor Bob Graham, I just wanted to again, we're not saying thoughts and prayers anymore. We're saying we want to see some action for safe gun reforms in this country. It's so easy to sit at home behind our computers or with our families and just send thoughts and prayers out to the people that are affected and the children who were gunned down in Santa Fe, what is it, Texas? Mm-hmm. Right? And then we just
New Mexico,
had...
Mexico, wasn't it?
No, it was Texas.
Was it Texas?
It was Texas, yeah.
It was Texas.
I think.
Wow. Boy, it was like Texas. Wow,
it's okay.
They've gotten a beating.
This is why Viewpoint
with
Cedar and Friends is so much fun. It's fun. Yeah. It's unscripted. It's informative and educational. And we learn from each other.
Absolutely.
Just like our people who are listening on the radio
but
or
all
those
of this,
watching it online. But what I'm saying is, you know, it's time for action. Mm-hmm. We all talk about bump stocks. We all talk about the assault rifles. We talk about the rounds that these rifles can fire. We also talk about mental health. But it all goes back to we've got to start looking at our communities. We have to fix our communities. Know your family members. If you see something, say something.
Well, that's what it boils down to, because every time something has happened like this, someone says, I knew that was going to happen. Or, you know, even in the situation of a bad police officer, a police officer that's not acting appropriately, that somebody says, I knew that was going to happen. Unfortunately, in Florida, the shooting that we had in Florida, unfortunately, they said specifically we did say something and nobody took action.
Right.
So now it's not just let's say something and let's do something about it, but we need to make sure that we're following through with all of the things when someone does speak up.
And it's also, it seems as though the people who own guns, the people who want their guns, the people who want to have the right to bear arms, and they should, we also have to look at the social and cultural impact that it's having on our country. Like, ask yourself, why do you want a gun? Is it to protect yourself and your family, or is it because you have evil thoughts and you want to hurt someone? Right. You know, so I think we all have to look at each other at some point and say, our children are dying. Little children who go to school, or children in middle school and high school, they're going to school to get an education. They want to get the skill sets to be a better human being when they leave school and they graduate. No child should be sitting in a classroom worrying if there's a loud bang in this class, should I get up and run under the desk or should I hide in the bathroom?
Right.
And the teachers shouldn't have to teach. It's so fearful. It's almost like these people who have decided to use guns as a weapons of war in our schools, they've done more damage than ISIS and Al-Qaeda and all these people to the psychological mind and state of our children and our teachers. And I mean, for those of us who have grandchildren and children in schools, I mean, we've got to look at, I mean, it's multifaceted, right? Maybe we can have the metal detectors as well as look at the entries, as well as buzz people in, whatever it takes. It's not a Republican or a Democratic issue at this point. It is an American issue.
Well, and Polk County said no more backpacks. I mean, there are certain counties that are taking action, and it's not just arming the teachers. You know, that wasn't the solution necessarily, but the no more backpacks and other items like that, like having SROs, student resource officers, at the schools.
Even if they arm the teachers, the truth of the matter is, what are you going to do? Arm the skating rink personnel? Right. Are you going to arm people at the parks? Are you going to arm people in grocery stores? Are you going to arm people in the malls? I mean, at some point, as a country, as a nation, we all have to say to ourselves, enough is enough.
Yes.
The gun violence in this beautiful United States of America has got to stop. And I think all of us have to get to that point where we say, let's just have some action. Listen to Moms Demand Gun Sense for America. They're moms. I mean, a mother, you know, carries, we are pregnant for 9 months. We carry these babies, these precious babies, and we can tell you how to fix it. Proper background checks. The banning of certain rifles. I mean, nobody's saying to take away the right to bear arms. We're just saying, listen to the mothers and the fathers of these children.
And I've added, you should give up your HIPAA rights to some degree if you've ever been on psychotropic drugs. I think we should know about that if you plan on owning a gun.
I've always said, you know, if you want to buy a gun, what they should do, they should say, you know what, I'm going to have a questionnaire sent to your five people you went to school five of your family members. In that questionnaire, you said, do you think Mr. So-and-so should have a gun? Because you know what, who knows you better than the people you went to school with and your family members?
And if you don't have five people that
says,
don't know you?
Hell no, right? Then you don't get a gun. If your sister says, oh no, that person gets really angry really quick, no, then you shouldn't have one. You know, really, who knows you better than the people that you hang out with, right?
That's right. But if you don't have five people, then you shouldn't be able to get
one. No, I mean, it's just, we have to use common sense. We just can't we shouldn't be able to go to a gun show and buy a gun from a private owner who is only interested in making a buck off that gun and not what's happening to society. It's not about money. It's about people. It really is, right?
Right, absolutely.
Our children are dying. So as moms and dads and grandmas and people who are running for office and whatever, we need to put America first and make America safe again. We can make it great and safe. Why not?
That's amen.
And I think we have on the phone, we have the former governor for our state of Florida, Robert Graham, which is Bob Graham. So welcome to our show, Mr.
I don't know. Thank you for the invitation.
Oh my gosh, I'm in awe. I'm in shock, and I can't believe that you're taking the time to call in on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. We are truly blessed to have you on our show. We follow you. I'm a great fan of Gwen's, and I am so grateful. So
Sita's got her I'm about to meet a celebrity glasses on.
Yes. I wish you were here. I heard you wanted to come in person. But you're too far away. Where are you calling in from?
Miami Lakes.
Miami
That's
Lakes.
My home.
Yeah, that would have been a little bit of a distance for you to come all the way in Cocoa, Florida. So, tell us a little bit. You decided, of course, you're helping Gwen Senator on her race. So you're taking the time to call in a Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. Tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and why you think your daughter will be the best governor for the state of Florida.
Well, I'd like to focus on that last question. I think that she would be the best governor for Florida first because she has had a wide range of personal experiences which have put her in contact with the primary issues that face the state. Everything from having worked with the Leon County School Board for 7 years, which has given her an intimate knowledge of what I think is the biggest challenge the state's facing, which is to rejuvenate its public schools, to the fact that her husband is dealing with cancer, which has caused her to have a very sharp experience with the healthcare system in Florida, and understands how important it is for instance, to expand Medicaid to all eligible Floridians. She also is a person who has demonstrated her political skills. She ran in 2014 in a very conservative congressional district in North Florida with an incumbent Tea Party congressman and won, which indicates that she has the ability to appeal across a wide range of Floridians' backgrounds and political interests and be successful. She was rated as one of the most effective members of the United States Congress, even in her first term in office, which is very unusual and significant. I think it demonstrates that she's electable and that once in office, she will be an effective governor for Florida, being able to deal across the aisle with people who start out in a different position. She has the ability to bring them to a point where they can actually agree on what needs to be done to make Florida a better place.
You know,
so I think she
I think from speaking with people, when I speak with them about Gwen Graham, which is Governor Graham's daughter, former Governor Graham, who's on the phone, Senator Graham, who's talking. He's got so many titles. We just have to say them all. People, a lot of my friends tell me she is seen as a unifier. She's able to unify people from both sides of the aisle. She's not stuck in one mindset. And I think that's great because, you know, we're at a time in our country when it's so divisive right now. And I think we do need to have people that's able to reach across the aisle and say, let me listen to you, hear what you have to say, and come up with a solution together.
Absolutely. That's what democracy is about. People being able to put aside their egos and focus on what do we need to do in Florida to really make our schools better? What do we need to do in Florida to make health care available to more of our citizens that at an affordable cost? What do we need to do to protect what is the basic economic asset of Florida, which is our environment, so that it will continue to be attractive and a place that we're proud to live in, but also be there for our children and grandchildren.
And also, I love that she's always talked about fixing our communities. We want to fix Florida and we want to fix public schools and we want to make sure that every child have the same opportunity and empower each and every one of us, I think we have to also look at our communities. How do we fix our communities and help people to then help Florida?
You're absolutely right. It starts at the neighborhood, the community, then bubbles up to the state and the national. I'm a strong advocate of how to get more people civically engaged so that they can begin the process of making their schools, their communities, their neighborhoods a better place, and with that develop the skills to make our state and nation a stronger place for us and our children.
Yeah, I think it's great when people, you know, 4th of July, Memorial Day, people wear a hat, it has the American flag on it, they've got the flag hanging in the yards, or, you know, whatever. But the thing is, it starts every day that we wake up. Every single day that we wake up, we need to be doing something for America, whether it's in our churches or local communities. Clean your yards, recycle, teach your children how to go to the beach and pick trash up. Whatever it is, we're really doing it for the common good for Americans. And I love that Gwen Graham, these are things that she talks about, is fixing our communities from the ground up. So, Senator, tell us, is Florida ready for a woman governor?
Absolutely. Florida's been a state since 1845, and we've never had a woman governor. Most states have broken that barrier. Gwen will be the first one to do so in Florida. I personally think that women have some characteristics such as the ability to put aside ego and focus on what it's going to take to get common sense things done. For instance, in this, the area that's gotten so much attention recently, gun safety. What's it going to take to get some common sense things such as a comprehensive background check so people don't slip through the cracks who shouldn't have access to guns to get them? What's it going to take to put limitations on these high-capacity assault weapons that have frequently been the source of mass slaughter? I think that women can focus on what are some common sense ways to solve those problems better than men have been able to do, and that we'll all be the beneficiaries of those qualities.
Well, I don't have any hard feelings towards men, but I think it's time to give a woman a chance. I mean, we're able to multitask. We can carry our children to nine months, give birth to them, and we can go right back to work and do whatever we have to do to protect that child. And I think it's time for a woman governor for the state of Florida as well. So, Senator, tell us, is it harder to run for office yourself or watch your daughter run for office?
I think it's harder to watch your daughter or a loved one run for office because you know what they're experiencing and you feel empathy for them. Whereas if you're the candidate, you're on the field, you're playing the game directly, and you don't have the time to think about how hard it is. But I think Gwen has held up very well. In fact, I believe she's stronger, more vivacious, more articulate today than she was when the campaign started, even though she's been working at this hard for over a year. And I think it's those very qualities that she's demonstrating as a candidate that will make her a very effective governor.
And Senator, what do we say to people who say that there's just way too much money in politics? I mean, we know we hear our candidates who are so passionate about the issues, about the environment and public education and affordable housing. And, you know, we want to say to those people, we hear you, but at the same time, there's so much money in politics, and some of the candidates are actually being judged by how much money they collect, which I think is not fair.
Well, I agree that when I ran for governor the first time, and I ran in a first primary, a second primary, and then the general election, I think I spent about $7 million. Today, that's just kind of chump change. Candidates are talking about spending $100 million to run for governor. That is an intolerable situation, and it opens the way for special interests to exercise too much influence and control over state government. I've been around enough to know that when an organization puts massive amounts of money behind a political candidate, they're not doing it just because of their feelings of good citizenship. They're doing it in part because they think that they'll get something out of the candidate if he or she is elected. And that's very destructive of our basic democratic belief that every citizens should have equal weight in terms of who their leader's going to be.
Yeah,
of what the U.S. Supreme Court has made some decisions which make it difficult to rein in the excessive amount of money that's being spent. But I think that within whatever ability the state of Florida has, it ought to be exercised to try to reduce the influence money in politics.
For our audience who are listening, all our friends, we're speaking with former Governor Bob Graham, who was also a senator for the state of Florida. He's calling in to speak with us about his daughter, Gwen Graham, for governor, a Democrat running for office here in Florida. One more thing, you know, we have all these people that come up to us and say the Democrats have lost their message. How do we get our message back that our party is the party that cares about all the things that we, you know, we all talk about, public education and affordable housing and affordable health care for people, Medicaid, the Children's Health Insurance Program. How do we get that message so that we get people off the couch to vote?
Well, just look at what's happened with 20 years of one-party rule in Florida. When I was governor, Florida had a higher per capita income than the nation as a whole. That is, Floridians, on average, earned more money every year than Americans did. Today, we've slipped far behind that. I've seen statistics that indicate that Florida is now set only 85% of what the nation is in terms of per capita income. Our schools are not getting the funding that they need. There's been a 15% decline in recent years in per capita spending on the most fundamental activity of state government, which is educating the next generation. The people of Florida 5 years ago voted for what was called Amendment 1, which provided funding for some of our most important environmental programs. And yet the legislature has largely disregarded what the people have spoken by a 75% margin that they wanted. Those are examples of where Florida state government has, in my opinion, failed the people, and it's time to
It's return. Almost as if no one is listening. It's almost as if no one takes the time to listen to the citizens once they're elected. And I know you did a great job of listening to people when you were our governor and our senator as well. But I wanted to ask you really quick just a question about Gwen's campaign. And you have a really long legacy on conserving the environment. Where does Gwen stand on environmental issues?
I don't think there's any light between my commitment to the environment and Gwen's. She is a strong supporter of, for instance, avoiding fracking in Florida, which could have extremely negative impacts on our underground freshwater aquifers. She's a strong opponent of drilling for oil and gas in the waters surrounding Florida. She's a strong supporter of things like Amendment 1, continuing to acquire the environmentally sensitive lands that will protect our water supplies in Florida. She will be an outstanding governor for Florida's environment.
And just before we went on air, we were having a discussion about Big Sugar and the impact that it has on our state. Can you give us a little information about that? Do you have anything to say about that?
Well, I mentioned earlier the influence of money on politics, and this is a perfect example. One of the largest political contributors in Florida are the major sugar companies, and they have increasingly been an obstacle to accomplishing one of the most important environmental objectives for Florida, and that is to complete the restoration of the Everglades. Gwen has taken on the sugar interest. She has not taken their money in this campaign, and she won't. And she is going to be a strong advocate to complete the restoration of the Everglades and all that will mean in terms of water and natural resource benefits for Florida.
So after 20 years of Republican control in Tallahassee, you were a governor, which we all loved you dearly. You were a senator of our state, Bob Graham. Can Democrats really cash in on this big blue wave that's coming and win back Florida?
Yes, Florida is very winnable. It has been close in the last two gubernatorial elections. Governor Scott was elected by about 1%, both in 2010 and then again in 2014. So Democrats don't have an enormous mountain to climb to win in 2018, but it's going to take a candidate who can unify the Democrats and independents and a lot of serious Republicans who share the concern that I've expressed about what's happened to our state over recent years. Yes, a Democrat can win if they have the qualities of Gwen Graham. She'll be a great Florida governor, and we'll all be proud to have her giving quality leadership again to Florida.
And Senator Graham, we speak to people a lot because I've thrown my hat in a race here in District 52 to run as a state rep as well. And one of the biggest issues that I hear from people is they can't survive on the wages that they receive right now. What do you think is the biggest issue facing Florida today, and how would Gwen fix that?
Well, I think, one, Governor Scott has had as his motto, job, jobs, jobs. What that means is that many Floridians have to work three jobs in order to earn a living wage. I think Gwen will be a very strong advocate for economic development in Florida, but economic development that benefits all Floridians. As I indicated earlier, the kind of jobs that we've been bringing to the state have tended to be jobs that are even lower in hourly wages than the ones we already had, bringing the average south instead of north. We're, as I said, instead of being above the national average, we're now way behind the national average in terms of wages. Gwen also supports increasing the state's minimum wage. I think the minimum wage should be set at whatever is required to have a livable wage in Florida, and it ought to be indexed so justice, automatically adjusting as the cost of change.
Right. Well, we have about one or two minutes left, and I wanted to ask you, do you have the website for Gwen Graham for governor?
Yeah.
I do.
Yes,
We've got it. We'll do that for you, but I know that I wanted to get this question in before we go off air. We've just got about less than a minute, and my producer is giving me the nod. Governor, Senator Bob Graham, thank you for calling in, but tell me, what do you do in your spare time?
Well, my wife says I failed at retirement, so I don't have a lot of spare time, but I'm very interested in civic education, worked hard on that. I'm very interested in protecting the environment. I've been chairman of the Florida Conservation Coalition. I haven't had too much spare time to spend, and now I'm focused like a laser on Gwen's campaign, because I think it's so important to Florida to have a strong, effective governor, and if that can be a woman governor, so much better.
Well, we will share all of this great information, Senator Graham. Thank you so much for calling in, and we've posted all of this on our website, as well as we'll make sure that the podcast that goes out includes all of this great information about Gwen and her campaign. And we thank you so much for taking the time this morning to call in.
Yes, we do. And
well, thank you.
And we'd love to have you back again. If you could make some time for us, we'd love it.
All right. I look forward to that. Thank you, Sita, and good luck in your campaign.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Wow, how exciting.
Yes.
Sita.
I've met him quite a few times, and he's just a charming, humble person.
Yes.
He's the kind of person that you do want a politician to be, someone who can look at people who are from different backgrounds, different races, different political parties, and they can unify Florida and the states, you know? And I hear politicians who are leaning to the left or leaning to the right, and I'm not one of those. I think everyone has something to offer. It's just the way they speak and how they think. You've got to try to meet them at their level at some point. Right. And he's done that. And, I mean, that's why he was such a great governor, and that's why his daughter having a father like him would be a great governor as well. Because
and he's been involved.
We live by example, you know?
He's been involved in Florida since the late 1960s.
Yeah.
When he first ran for a Congress or Senate. I forget which one.
I think we can all learn a lot from him.
Absolutely.
And I think that's what those of us who are running for office, Sanjay, myself, and others, we have to understand. It's not about rah, 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 let's only listen to our base. Mm-hmm. When you do that, you're not allowing other people to come into the conversation.
That's right.
And this is what democracy is about. You don't have the answers to everything, but you can certainly sit down with someone and listen. And you could walk away saying, I disagree respectfully, but you should listen.
Right.
You know,
and
so,
it's the compassion and the caring and the understanding behind all of it. You may not have all the answers, but you certainly can come up with some ideas about how to rectify most situations.
Well, Ellen, you brought a guest today to our show, Dana, and she's a nurse as well. So I want you to introduce
a former nurse.
Former, just like the former.
But she
governor.
Is an awesome photographer. I don't know how she was as a nurse, but she's an awesome photographer.
I thought I was a pretty good nurse as well.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I can't speak to that. But Dana has been a photographer here in Brevard County for quite a few years and done a lot of work at the Henniger Center, which is where we kind of first connected. And then her business has just taken off, and she's out to make sure the photography of Brevard
County
is awesome.
She's out to photog.
Awesome. Photog, right.
Photog. Yeah. Photog. I haven't heard that.
But we're so happy to have you.
Thank you.
And thanks for stopping by.
Yes, it's great. So,
what's it like being in a radio studio for the first time?
You know, I love it. I feel like I have a
face
for radio.
At home.
But
yeah,
I think that's wonderful.
Don't we make you feel at home?
Yes, you really have.
Well, you know, that's the thing about Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, our show. When Ellen and I started the show, we were doing like a half an hour, and we quickly went an hour. The show is fun. It's unscripted, so if people are looking to hear anything from a script,
you're not going to find it here.
You're not going to find it here. What you hear is what we feel in our heart and how we feel our world should be, and this is our contribution to Mother Earth, ourselves. I'm taking our talents, our gifts, and our abilities and giving it back to the good citizens of Brevard County and to the world, right? So we just come here every Monday. We pretend we're having coffee, but we're not. We're just talking, right? Mm-hmm. So we had former Senator Bob Graham, who was the governor of our state, just called in on behalf of his daughter Gwen Graham's campaign. And now we have in studio our friend Sanjay Patel is here. And Sanjay is also running for office, and he's running for a congressional seat in District 8. Yes. So Sanjay, welcome to our show.
Thank you so much for having me.
He looks really cleaned up. Look at him.
I clean up well.
Shirt and tie. It looks like a real congressman today.
Yes, that's right.
That's what people tell me, too. Like, I'll be in my nurse's uniform, and nobody recognizes me. And then they'll see me. Don't I know you from somewhere? You clean up good.
Like Dana, I have a good face for radio.
Yeah. So Dana, you wouldn't have a lot of trouble if you had to photograph Sanjay, right?
Oh, absolutely not.
You'll get all the good angles.
You have a lovely photograph. Very handsome.
So, and by the way, really quickly, Dana Photography is located down in downtown Melbourne in Henniger Center.
Yeah,
so
in the Henniger Center.
If anybody is running for office, needs some photography for events or any of those kinds of things, make sure that you look up. It's danaphotography.com, correct?
Yeah, Dana N. Photography.
Dana N. Photography.
Ellen, you know everybody.
Yes, she really
does.
Well,
right back at you, kiddo.
You know what? And the thing is, your friends have become my friends, and, you know, vice versa, of course.
Yes.
But the thing is, what you do for community, too, is awesome. And I just want to say, on air, you are the most awesome friend that someone can have.
Oh.
Although I threw you under the bicycle earlier.
That's okay.
Yeah.
That's all right. That's what part of it.
The bicycle instead of the bus. It was a small tired
bicycle.
So Sanjay Patel is here, and Sanjay is the American dream. He's a first-generation immigrant, the son of parents who had barely a high school education, just like my parents. My mother only went up to second grade, and my dad only went up to fourth grade. He's a graduate of UCLA with a degree in economics. He built a small business, a nonprofit, and now he's here in Brevard with his lovely wife, Stacy, and he's decided to take his talent, gift, and abilities and run for office and give back to Brevard County, Florida. So, Sanjay, tell us, what made you jump in to run in this race?
So my story, you know, I think it's shared by quite a few people. When my family journeyed to this country, you know, my parents, they didn't have any money. They didn't know the language. And growing up, I grew up in a rough part of Los Angeles. And they did whatever they needed to do to raise us. There were four of us kids. So I remember my parents leaving the house at odd hours of the day to take on the minimum wage jobs that they had. And through the years, I watched them, their work ethic, I've never met two people who've worked harder in their lives. And I think that that's been ingrained within me as well. But they did whatever they needed to do, and they were able to provide for us. So I got a great education. I went to public school during my elementary years, got some scholarships, got to attend a very nice private school. And then I went back for my education, my college degree, and I went to a public university. And so watching my parents, the sacrifices they made to make sure that their kids had a great life in this country, I feel so blessed to have had that opportunity. And growing up, you know, Sita mentioned this, I've been able to start my own business, start my own nonprofit, and I am the American dream. What we're seeing today, though, that opportunity that I've been so blessed to have is merely an illusion for too many people. People are struggling. They're not making enough money to take care of their families. Education opportunities are limited. I see kids who are, you know, near senior level, and they can't decide whether or not they can go to college because they don't know how they'll pay for it or if they'll have a good job to pay for the loans that they'll take on. So what we're seeing today, it's essentially this, we're seeing the greatest wealth inequality in our nation's history right now. And this American dream that I've been privileged and lucky to have attained, I want that opportunity for every American. So I feel compelled, I feel obligated that I have to do whatever it takes to make sure that that opportunity that I was so lucky to have is available to every American. So that's why I'm running.
Right. And thank you so much. It's so perfect. And it, you know, it just hits people in their heart why people run for office, right? People run for office for various reasons, and I think that's perfect. But here's the thing, you know, everybody wants the American dream. You know, we come here from different countries, and we come with this gung-ho attitude that we're going to work, and we're going to provide for our families. But how do we instill those values in people who are born in the United States and looking for guidance, right? So many people are born to parents who are working two jobs, or some parents are not even at home. Some children are living with grandparents. How do we take our values as immigrants that brought us to this country and give back to this wonderful country?
I think some of that comes down to societal issues, right? So let's take jobs, for example. Most folks are struggling to make enough, to make ends meet. The last United Way study showed that 35 to 40% of folks living in Brevard and Indian River County struggle to meet their basic daily needs. So if your parents are working, let's say, two or three jobs, and you don't have enough money to bring into the household to maintain your family, most of these families are one emergency away from complete, total, utter financial disaster. Be it one car accident, one health emergency. And so when you're in this precarious position of you don't have enough to make ends meet, that trickles down to every other aspect of your life. Even look at education right now. So folks who want to go to college, the costs have skyrocketed. So I know my wife has education loans from back when she went to college. The price of going to college, and if you're not going to college, if you want to, let's say, you know, build a trade for yourself, those opportunities aren't there for you. So then we go to healthcare. There's over 2.6 million Floridians do not have health insurance, and many millions more do have health insurance, but the premiums and deductibles are so expensive that, in essence, you don't have any type of coverage because you can't afford to go to the doctor. When we take every aspect of those different elements and you've put that on a family, it's really hard to make it out.
Right. And what about the people that fall into the gap, that they make a little too much? They make enough to live, but they can't afford the $600-$700 a month for health care for a family.
Exactly.
But they don't qualify for Medicaid.
Exactly.
I mean, that to me, that is horrible, because I mean, that's why basically I went back to work as well. I mean, for one person to have good health care with vision and dental and medical, for me, it was about $650 a month. And I can afford it if I really wanted to stop giving all my charitable stuff to various people and stuff. But the truth of the matter is, how does a family, let's say a mom and dad combined income, they're making $26 an hour to come home. Even that, you can't afford health care for a family of four. Mm-hmm. somebody's got to take it out of their paycheck.
And think of the jobs people are taking. So are people living fulfilled lives by taking jobs merely so that they can have health insurance? Right. So we see a lot of kids who will come out of college, who will take on corporate jobs that aren't really meaningful to them, or they'll stick
to get the benefits.
Just to get the benefits.
Yeah, that's exactly. America today. How many women have to leave their children and go to work for health care? I mean, we've got to at some point get to a point in our country where people are paid a decent wage with benefits. I said jobs with benefits is where it's at in this political season. That's what people want.
And I think we have to provide health care should be a human right. And I support, you know, Medicare for all. We need to make sure that we provide health care to every citizen.
I think
citizen.
One day we're going to get that. I really do. Even if you get a welfare check, you should pay something out of that towards healthcare. So everybody's going to have to pay their fair share. If you're rich and you make millions and billions of dollars, pay your fair share. That's how it's going to be. We have to help each other. This is a global village, our world, right? So you recently completed a listening tour of your district. What issues did you find are the top priorities with the voters right now?
So the first thing, before I jump into the issues, The top thing most folks have been really just proud of is the fact that someone is listening to them. For too long, especially within our own district, they feel that our elected representatives aren't accessible. And so the fact that I went out to the district, I had 7 listening events in Brevard, Indian River, and in Orange County. Folks really appreciate that a candidate would come out to them to actually hear them. When we did these listening events, though, again, I'd say the top priorities that came out for folks were healthcare, the economy, education, and the environment. These seem to bubble up across the district. And folks are concerned about they don't have the right type of healthcare, they're not making enough money, the environment. We're watching the Indian River Lagoon right now. With this rain event that we're experiencing, so I looked at the forecast, it looks like we've got about maybe another 2 weeks of really rainy conditions. That is going to be disastrous towards the Indian River Lagoon. Those conditions actually, you know, predicate that we may have another fish kill coming our way. So regardless of party, these are issues that
hit everyone, right?
Exactly.
You know, one of the things I hear about too, because I mean, you know me, Ellen knows me by now. I can talk to the wall, and the wall will talk back.
And the wall will talk back.
Yeah, and the wall will tell me, like, part. Everything about the wall's life. Like, am I concrete? Am I stucco? What kind of paint? Is it lead paint, right? But here's the thing. I also speak with people a lot from all walks of life. And one of the things I hear about a lot, too, is affordable housing. People can't, I mean, a rent for a, okay, we all talk about safety and security for our families. But I have to say, safety and security for our families is not for the rich only. Everyone exactly. should have safety and security in their neighborhoods, in their schools, anywhere they live. So a decent apartment that you don't have to worry about your car getting broken into or someone pointing a gun at you, a decent apartment for a one bedroom is $895 a month. So a two bedroom in some of those places are maybe $1,200. So how do we help people? I mean, I cannot imagine anyone making $9 an hour, $10 an hour, and saying, hey, I have a great place to live. You can't afford $895 for one bedroom at that rate. And then you have some politicians that say, well, we want to take away certain benefits from people, right? So how do we help those people when we talk about affordable housing?
So some of that comes down to we've got to make sure that we have elected officials at every level that are focused on tackling these issues. So in the state of Florida, there is a fund called the Sadowski Trust Fund. And essentially what that does is make sure that there's an amount of money that is set aside for affordable housing. That fund has been raided year after year here in the state of Florida. And so whatever money was set aside for affordable housing isn't actually going towards that. So we've got to make sure that even at the state level, we elect the right representatives. And I hope, Sita, you get there and you can work on this one. But from every level, from the federal all the way down to your city council, we got to make sure that people are aware that affordable housing is a huge issue, it's not just in our district, but across the country, and that we take measures to address it.
Right. And I like to take that one step further, that even if you qualify for Section 8 mm-hmm. and the state is helping to pay for a lodging for you, dude, pick up a brush, paint the house if mm-hmm. you have to, mm-hmm. right. clean around it. You know, you can buy some flowers for less than $10. and you could plant it around that home. You don't have to wait for the landlord to do everything. And I think that's what Governor Graham was talking about, Senator Graham, like Pastor Paul said, is that personal responsibility starts with each and every one of us. And I like the idea that people are able to get assistance with home, with their housing or with food or with healthcare. But there's no excuse when you drive by some neighborhoods and you see people sitting, mm-hmm. hanging out, relaxing their bones, right? But you know what? There's a like an empty barrel or a box or some debris right there next to you in the yard. Get up and pick it up. Because it takes exactly, Dana just said it, take pride. Because mm-hmm. when you take pride in where you live and in pride in your children and pride in your communities, mm-hmm. it trickles to everything else, right? Because we have a few rentals, and I think I told Ellen this, one of the fellows left, and I swear to God, I don't think he cleaned that stove for the entire 3 years he was there. Mm. And I said to my husband, I cannot believe somebody would, you go to the bank, you get a loan, or you pay for a house or whatnot, so someone could rent. And then they say, well, renters don't care. Well, I want to say, if you're renting, you should care. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter where you live, you should care. No one should be able to tell the difference between a district that's Section 8 or a district that's affluent. Everyone should be able to get up in the morning, take 5-10 minutes. It takes, a few minutes to plant some flowers. Mm-hmm. And it's so inexpensive in America to just go somewhere and get some flowers or some paint and just take care of where you live, right? Mm-hmm. Dana says mm-hmm to everything.
I am.
Dana, you can jump right in. I think you have something to add.
I'm with you, Sita.
I think you have something to add there, right?
No, I just think that what's the answer for that? So people that are renting, people that, are not able to afford the American dream, the picket fence, the home where they, where their children can go to a school that they feel is safe. So where does that start? Where does that pride start?
It starts at home.
Yes, it does.
The foundation for everything in life starts in the home.
Mm-hmm. But that's something. There are people that don't have that sense of pride.
Right.
And why don't they?
Right.
What has not been instilled, or what have our communities not done to bolster those people and to, maybe go outside and provide their children extra mentorship that maybe they can't provide because they're at work. They're at that minimum wage
even
job,
if you're at work,
working.
Even if you're at work, mm-hmm. my parents had 18 children.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Lord.
Combined. But you know what? We had a sense of pride instilled in us by them.
That was them.
Just the mere fact that you're alive on this mm-hmm. planet, they said your life had to have purpose, mm-hmm. right? So, Sanjay, you're a Democrat running in a red district. And as you know, I think Ellen and I had talked about this on the show before. We're not white. We're not Christian. Well, you might be Christian.
No.
You're not Christian. you weren't born in the United States. But you are traditional because you're married and you have a wife and you celebrate Christmas and Thanksgiving and everything, right? But the thing is, there are some people that would say, which I've heard a lot, a Democrat can't win here because it is a Christian red town. But guess what? We have values too. Mm-hmm. We have the same values, right? We love family, we love God, we love country. And I respect everybody's religion as well, and so do you.
Absolutely.
So what do you say to people who say you're a Democrat running in a district that's totally red, like a red bull, like from Spain, those red bull, the things that they put in front of the bull. I don't even know what you call it anymore. I'm having a mental block. When the bulls are brought out.
Take their cape off.
The cape, yeah.
Matadors
are so handsome too. They're always so handsome.
I don't know.
So what do you say to people who say that to you?
So essentially what I, for me to get on the ballot this year, I went the petition route. And I actually collected 9,215. So almost 4,000 more than I needed. That was the most of any congressional candidate in the state. And I'd say a lot of those petitions were signed by non-Democrats. They were Republicans and NPAs.
They want to give you a chance. Which is awesome.
Exactly. And it came down to conversation. I'll give you a good example of this. So I was in Indian River County getting petitions signed for myself. And I met a woman and I said, hey, I'd love to, get on the ballot this year. Would you mind signing a petition for me? And she said, well, what are you? And she meant, what party am I? I said, I'm a Democrat. And she said, you know what? I can't sign that. I voted for Trump, and started walking away. Said, just hold on one sec. Give me 30 seconds. Just want to talk to you about just what issue is most important to you. And she said, healthcare. I said, okay, tell me more about that. And she explained how her son was going through the system, and you know, essentially she was having a ton of struggles with the healthcare system. And I told her, you know what, I think that healthcare should be a human right, that we need to make sure everyone is taken care of. And she said, I really like that. She not only signed my petition, but she got the rest of her family to come back, and she said, you're going to sign this guy's petition. I find that if we, you know, we are so divided in this country. You've got a D or an R next to your name, and we're mortal enemies. If we get beyond that and say, look, let's actually talk about the issues that are affecting all of us, I find that we have a lot more common ground than things that divide us. There are certain things that we're never going to agree on, but I'm willing to have that conversation with you. And if there is that piece of common ground, I'm going to go fight for it.
Yeah.
And so I think that's true. And we won last year.
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing is, most people who wake up every day, they want the same thing. They want to be loved and appreciated. That's it. They want to have a job. People want to be able to pay their rent or pay their mortgages. They want to be able to pay for their cars, buy car insurance.
They want self-respect.
You know, some want respect. Mm-hmm. They want to send their kids to school that's safe and secure. I think at the end of the day, most mothers and fathers want the same thing, and people want to practice their faith. Mm-hmm. They want that as well, right? So why do you think people should vote? Why should people vote?
We have to vote because we have to reclaim our government. For too long, what we've seen are politicians, elected officials, who go up to government, they don't represent us. And in fact, what they do is once they get up there, they retain that power and use it for their own benefit and their own self-interest. We as Americans need to not only engage back into our democracy, but we have to take our government back and make sure that it actually represents the people. We've got to take that power back into our own hands.
So why do you think people have become so laid back? And, you know, they say, oh, it's very hard to beat an incumbent. So if you look at the income, I don't think negative campaigning is a way to go. I think you have to stay positive, because nowadays with technology, if you want to know about a candidate, all you have to do is put his name in the web and it comes right up. And if you want to know if he voted a certain way for something that you care about, you can find out, right? So there's no need to go negative. But what is this silliness that people would vote for an incumbent only because I recognize his name? Dude, do your homework.
Right.
I mean, come on. So you're going to vote for somebody because, oh, I know him. Well, did he ever come into your neighborhood and talk to you about you making $9 or $10 an hour and can't pay childcare? Did he talk to you about that your car insurance, you can't buy that, so you have to share one car with a spouse? These are the things that I talk to people about. Does he ever ask you, well, oh, geez, your mortgage payment, and when they add the taxes and insurances that you really can't afford it, so you'll have to stay renting? I mean, these are issues facing regular people. So what is it about people that they don't care and they just say, oh, well, I'll just go on with my life and vote the man back in?
That's the big challenge, right? And so how do we do that?
Or the woman. The man or the woman.
Yeah, don't forget
I think
this.
A couple things is we have to give people something to vote for and something to believe in. And when we have that, we have to spread that message far and wide. And people are struggling. People are working two or three jobs. They've got so much on their plate just maintaining their daily life. They don't see the impact of, well, nothing really changes. If I vote, what's going to change for me? How does this help me? In fact, if you look at a number of the elections, especially in midterm elections, voter turnout is significantly reduced. People don't come out and vote. More people who don't vote ultimately decide the outcome of our elections. We've got to
sit on the fence. You know, because I'm like, okay, to me, voting is such a wonderful thing. You're exercising your right to someone who's going to represent you in your district. So I take it very seriously.
Absolutely.
Because, and I think we need to instill in people the same, the way we feel, because I care about public education. I do care if there's a fish kill. I do care about the restoration of people's rights to be able to vote. I do care about gun violence and how we can have safety in our schools. I do care about the criminal justice system and who's getting locked up and who's profiting from it, right? So why, and I get so passionate about it, and then I want to hold elected officials accountable. So how do we hold them accountable, Sanjay Patel, who's running for Congress in District 8?
So one of the things, and you know, we are make sure that right now big money kind of dictates what's going on. So I'm not taking any corporate PAC money. You know, ultimately, I'm not beholden to any special interests. I will represent the people. I am one of us. And so if we have folks who say, you know what, I'm not going to take Big Sugar Money or
Big Oil,
or Big Oil, any of these special interests that ultimately want elected officials who they owe them something. I'm not doing that. If we get regular folks to run for office who actually have been engaged in their communities, have been doing have been working in those communities for a while, ultimately that's who our government should be made up of. These folks who actually represent and know what's happening on the ground. There's such a disconnect between, even my opponent. They have no idea what the normal person in my district is going through right now. And so we've got to change that.
Right. And the sad thing is, it's in a way, you hear about all these people who've been elected, and the minute they get to Tallahassee mm-hmm. or Washington, it's all about the re-election machine.
Exactly.
I mean, come on now. You're there for a reason. You're supposed to be representing people in your district. If you're so consumed about the re-election, get a real job, like most of us who have jobs and then decide to run, and talk with people. Communication. A lot of them just don't communicate with their voters.
Exactly.
So if you're when you're elected, what is your plan to stay connected with the people in District 8?
So one of the first things I will hold in-person town halls. We'll figure out the frequency that makes sense for folks. But it's been, I want to say, over 8 years, if I'm not mistaken, since the current congressman in this district who's holding the seat has held an in-person town hall. He does a teletown hall, but folks want to meet their elected officials face-to-face.
Yeah, they want to see flesh and blood.
Absolutely.
And feel you and know that you're there.
Absolutely.
I find that's not that's very distasteful in a way. People, when they're elected, don't forget where you came from.
Exactly.
And that's not just in Brevard County, Florida, but all over the world. You see that people get elected and then they become, it's almost like you can't touch them.
Right.
Right?
The other thing I want to do too is I want folks in my district that I represent, want to make sure that they know why I voted the way I did. So when we have a vote come up, I'm going to make sure that we've got communication channels to let folks know.
So with the remaining 15 seconds, your website really quick so people can go donate and they could check out all your issues.
Thank you. VoteSanjayPatel.com.
And that is listed on all of our websites and Facebook pages at this time.
I had a Patel joke, but I don't think I have time.
No.
I'll say it really quick. My father used to say that if you go to the moon, you'll see an Indian man up there and he'll say, "Hi, my name is Mr. Patel." There's Patels everywhere.
Yeah. It's like Smith, right?
It is. My name's like John Smith.
Exactly right. That is so fantastic. And again, Sita, another fantastic episode of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends here on AM 1510 WWBC. We'll be back next week with another exciting show. Please make sure to check out our website, www.cetamediainc.com. And we are on iTunes, by the way, as well, so you can download it.
This is the Christian Voice of Brevard on WWBC 1510 AM.
We bow down and confess you are Lord in this place. We bow down and confess you are Lord in this place. You are all